Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all-new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. So skip replacing every carb with cauliflower and indulge in your breakfast, lunch, and dinnertime favorites while still hitting your goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas, to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at hero.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information. Fall is all about cozy comforts, and with Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your favorites and still hit your health goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles, you won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at hero.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
Welcome to Football Army. We are here to break down what was, just a chaotic week 12. The entire playoff picture, both in the NFL and in college, it feels like it got completely reorganized.
It absolutely did. This is one of those weeks where you get definitive answers. You know, we saw the NFC hierarchy just get flipped on its head in a matter of hours.
Right. And in the AFC, a dynasty that we all thought was over might be finding new life.
Exactly. And on top of all that, we saw an individual defensive performance that is, and I'm not exaggerating, it's truly one for the history books.
So that's our mission today. We are going to unpack the upsets, the dominant performances, and some of the coaching decisions that were just baffling, frankly. It's all setting the stage for Thanksgiving and the playoff push.
Yeah, everything has changed. Let's get into it.
All right, let's start in the NFC, because that's where the biggest shift happened. The whole conversation now is centered on Los Angeles.
It has to be. The Rams are 9-2, and they didn't just beat the Buccaneers, they dismantled them 34-7. They now have sole possession of the number one seed in the conference.
And it all started with Matthew Stafford. We've seen him be good, but this was something else. Surgical is the only word for it.
It really is. He came out of the gate 12-for-12 passing. You could tell immediately he was in a rhythm. And by halftime, the numbers were just absurd. He was 19-of-23 for 210 yards, 3 touchdowns, and no picks.
That is how you get a 31-7 halftime lead. I saw a stat that it was tied for the second highest first half score the Rams have ever had under Sean McVay.
Yeah, and it's not just the numbers, it's how they did it. McVay's scheme was just perfectly designed to attack what Tampa Bay was trying to do on defense.
Okay, so break that down for me. What was McVay seeing that allowed Stafford to just pick them apart like that?
Well, McVay knew the Bucs had to respect the outside speed, so he just leaned into play action. But he paired it with all this movement from the tight ends and the slot receiver.
So it creates confusion for the linebackers and safeties.
Exactly. You see Stafford just, hold a safety with his eyes for a split second, and that's all it takes. Look at Devontae Adams' 2 touchdowns. They weren't just him winning a one-on-one battle.
They were schemed open.
Perfectly schemed open. A shallow crosser with a deep clear-out route from the other side. The corner has to make a choice, and Adams just wins underneath every single time. 5 catches, 62 yards, and those 2 scores. I think that's 9 touchdowns for him in the last 5 games. Just incredible.
And it wasn't just the superstars, which is always the sign of a truly elite team, right? Tyler Higbee was out.
Yep, no Higbee. And the backup, Colby Parkinson, steps right in, catches his first 4 passes for 41 yards and a touchdown.
See, that's what I'm talking about. When a backup tight end can just slot into a complex system like McVay's and not miss a beat, that says everything about the coaching and the preparation.
It really does. Mm-hmm. And while the offense was doing all that, the defense was just completely dominant. This was the definition of complementary football.
Emmanuel Forbes Jr. had, 0 completions allowed on 8 targets?
8 targets, 0 completions, an interception, and 5 pass breakups. It was a textbook performance in coverage. He was just all over their receivers.
And that frees up the pass rush.
It does. They didn't have to blitz all day. The front 4 could just eat. And you saw Kobe Turner, who's been a big quiet. He gets 2 sacks.
And then there's Kobe Durant.
The Land Shark.
The Land Shark. Yeah, he lived up to the nickname. An interception return for a touchdown. That was the play that just broke Tampa's spirit. You could see it.
So when you put it all together, the interior push from Turner, Durant making plays in the secondary, Stafford's precision, you get that 34-7 beatdown. It was a message to the rest of the NFC.
Absolutely. The road to the Super Bowl, right now it goes through LA.
Okay, so let's pivot to the team that gave up that number one spot, the Philadelphia Eagles. They go into Dallas at 8-2, holding the tiebreaker, and they suffer a historic meltdown.
Historic is the right word. You're up 21-0 in the first half against your rival, and you lose 24-21. The stat that blows my mind is 0 points in the final 41 minutes and 30 seconds of the game. That's almost three full quarters of getting completely shut out.
Seven straight possessions to end the game with 0 points. Three and outs, turnovers on downs, punts. I mean, it was a total collapse.
And the blame, you know, it's landing squarely on the first-year offensive coordinator, Kevin Petullo.
Yeah.
But here's my question. Dallas's defense has been, statistically, one of the worst in the league. How did they suddenly look like the 85 Bears?
It's a great question, and I think it points directly to Petullo's lack of in-game adjustments. Dallas saw what Philly was doing in the first half, lots of early down runs, lots of play action, and they completely changed their scheme at halftime.
They started bringing more pressure.
More man coverage and more disguised blitzes from the slot. And Petullo he had no answer. He just kept calling the same predictable pass plays on third down that Dallas knew was coming.
It felt so passive, so uncreative. It's like the initial script worked great, but as soon as they had to improvise, the whole thing fell apart.
That's been the knock on him all season, and this game just put it under a microscope.
And what's wild is that even with this huge comeback win, Dallas had its own drama. CeeDee Lamb, what was going on there?
Yeah, that was bizarre. He had what some are calling a shameful outing. Three really bad drops, one that should have been a walk-in touchdown, and then he's seen on the sideline having a full-on tantrum.
While his team was in the middle of a comeback.
Right. And the icing is just so thick because George Pickens, the guy they traded a third-round pick for, he's the one who stabilizes the offense. He had 9 catches for 146 yards and a touchdown.
So Pickens, who the Steelers basically gave up on because of supposed maturity issues, is the mature, calming presence while Lamb is having a meltdown.
Exactly. Pickens even said he was meant to get this fresh start in Dallas. And you look at the numbers. His receiving yards this year are more than all the remaining Steelers wideouts combined.
That trade is looking worse and worse for Pittsburgh every single week.
It's a tough look. It just shows how much a player's environment really matters.
And while Dallas celebrates Tampa Bay, their whole season just got a lot darker. They dropped to 6-5, and now Baker Mayfield is hurt.
Yeah, that's a huge blow. Left the game in a sling, a left shoulder sprain. It happened on that failed Hail Mary attempt right before the half.
He's going to miss time, and that breaks a streak of, 48 straight starts for him.
Yeah.
He's been the definition of durable.
He has, and now you're turning to Teddy Bridgewater, but it's not just about the backup QB. The whole team just looked, I saw it described as heartless and checked out in the second half.
That's a coaching issue.
It points directly to Todd Bowles and his staff. A 6-5 record doesn't mean much if the team just quits when they face a little adversity.
All right, let's stick with the NFC, but move north. Because the NFC North has become maybe the most interesting division in football, and it's because of the Chicago Bears.
I mean, who would have predicted this? The Bears are 8-3. They just beat the Steelers 31-28 for their fourth straight win. And this isn't a fluke. This is real sustainable development from their key guys.
And it starts with Caleb Williams. The narrative around him is really starting to build. You have Mike Tomlin, the opposing coach, just openly praising him after the game.
And that's not something you hear every day. Tomlin was talking about his anticipation, his arm talent, his poise. It just validates what you see on the tape. The pairing of Caleb Williams and offensive coordinator Ben Johnson is becoming a serious problem for defenses.
And Johnson seems to be tailoring the offense perfectly for him. Lots of crossers, lots of quick hitting patterns.
It's just smart coaching. They know their offensive line can be inconsistent. So what do? You design plays that get the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly.
Right. It neutralizes the pass rush.
It completely neutralizes it. Williams can throw to a spot before his receiver even makes the break. It cuts down on the hits he takes. And it really stresses out the opposing linebackers and safeties. It's a much smarter approach than the deep drop back stuff they were trying to run before.
So they're winning with smart offense. But they're also winning despite, catastrophic injuries on defense.
Yeah.
They beat Pittsburgh without their top three linebackers.
Tremaine Edmonds, TJ Edwards, Noah Sewell.
Oh.
All out. That's the heart of your defense. gone.
And the backups, DeMarco Jackson and Ogbong Gamiga, they just stepped in and played great. That's the next man up mentality you always hear about, but you rarely see it work this well.
It really shows you the quality of the coaching and the depth they've built. When you can lose that much talent and still find a way to win a tough game, it tells you your foundation is solid. The scheme, the culture, all of it.
So the Bears at 8-3 just throw that whole NFC playoff picture into chaos. I mean, let's look at it. It feels like an 8-team race for 7 spots.
It really is. You've got the Rams and the Eagles who are probably, despite Philly's collapse, still near locks to make it. But after that...
After that, it's a total dogfight.
Yeah.
You have the Seahawks at 8-3, the Niners at 7-4, the Lions at 7-4, the Packers at 7-3-1, and now the Bears at 8-3.
And the Buccaneers are still technically hanging around at 6-5, though the Mayfield injury really hurts them.
So what about Dallas? That big win over the Eagles? How much did that help their chances?
It helped a lot, but they're still kind of on the outside looking in. Their chances are probably around, 10 to 13%. The real battle is that cluster of teams with 7 or 8 wins.
Right. The Seahawks and 49ers are beating each other up in the West, while the Bears, Lions, and Packers are all fighting for the North.
Every single game from here on out is basically a playoff game for those teams. The difference between getting a home playoff game and missing the postseason entirely could come down to a single tiebreaker. It's going to be wild.
Okay, let's flip over to the AFC because there's a power shift happening there that, nobody saw this coming. We have to talk about the New England Patriots.
It's kind of stunning, isn't it? The Patriots just won their 9th straight game. They beat the Bengals 26-20, and they're now 10-2. They have a huge lead over the Bills in the AFC East.
The Bills have owned that division for 5 straight years since Brady left. And now all of a sudden they're 7-4 after losing to the Texans, and they're looking up at New England. It's a harsh reality for them.
It is. Josh Allen got beat up in that Texans game. I think he was hit 12 times, sacked 8 times. And meanwhile, you've got the Mike Vrabel and Drake May duo in New England just quietly getting it done.
Vrabel's defense is legit, and May is just. He's not making the big mistakes. He's the perfect game manager for what they want to do.
And that's all they need. They finally ended that 5-year run of Buffalo's dominance in the division.
But that win came at a cost. Their rookie left tackle, Will Campbell, went down with a knee injury.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Sounds like an MCL sprain. He's going to miss multiple weeks, probably lands on injured reserve, which means at least 4 games.
That's a huge blow to their offensive line, right as they're heading into the toughest part of their schedule. That's really going to test their depth.
It will. It's a real stress test at the worst possible time.
But look, as big as the Patriots story is, the biggest individual story in the AFC, maybe in the whole league, is what Myles Garrett is doing.
Oh, it's unbelievable. He's not just having a great season. He is having a historically great season. He's got 18 sacks through 11 games.
And the stat that just breaks my brain, 14 of those sacks have come in the last 4 games. 14. That breaks Michael Strahan's record for a 4-game span.
When you're putting up numbers like that, the conversation changes from, is he the defensive player of the year, to is this the greatest defensive season of all time?
He's on pace for 27 sacks. That would just shatter the record. So how is he doing it? Teams are double-teaming him. They're sliding protection his way. How is he still winning at this rate?
It's the inside-out synergy. And you have to give the Browns front office a ton of credit here. They went out and got guys like Malik Collins, Mason Graham, Shelby Harris to beef up the interior of that defensive line.
Ah, so you can't just focus all your attention on Garrett anymore.
You can't. Because if you do, Collins or Graham is going to be in the quarterback's lap immediately. And what does a quarterback do when there's pressure up the middle?
They try to step up or escape the pocket.
They step up in the pocket. Right into Myles Garrett, who has been patiently waiting on the outside. The interior rush is forcing quarterbacks.
Over 2 centuries ago, it was England that taxed our tea. Now it's Brussels trying to regulate our companies. Under new European regulations, American businesses face crushing fines, forced disclosures, and foreign red tape that kills jobs here at home. America's laws should be written in America, not Brussels. Reject European regulatory overreach and uphold Trump's trade deal. Paid for by Americans for Limited Government.
Quarterbacks to hold the ball for just a half second longer, and for Garrett, that's all the time he needs.
It sounds terrifying. The whole unit had 10 sacks against the Raiders.
10 sacks. Collins had 2.5 himself. And Garrett, who was apparently sick all week, still managed to get 3 sacks and a strip sack. That's just a normal day at the office for him now.
Insane. And that performance led to a 24-10 win over the Raiders, which was also the first career win for rookie quarterback Shedeur Sanders.
It was. And, you know, he had some moments. He had that incredible deep ball to Bond where he avoided a sack and just launched it.
But he had some rookie moments, too. The head scratchers, as they were called.
Yeah, he had a really bad interception into double coverage that was just unnecessary. But overall, you saw the flashes. You saw the arm talent, the poise. And now the debate in Cleveland is, you know, is he good enough to keep the starting job?
And after a win, with that defense behind him, you have to think the answer is yes, right? Let the kid learn on the job.
I think so. You trust that elite defense to keep you in games and let him work through the mistakes.
Well, that loss was the final nail in the coffin for one coach. The Raiders fired their offensive coordinator, Chip Kelly, after just 10 games.
Brutal, but you can't be surprised. Their offense has been terrible. They failed to score more than 20 points in 6 of their last 7 games. There was just no identity, no creativity.
And the irony is just, it's incredible. Chip Kelly, who just won a national title as the OC at Ohio State, gets fired after losing to Shedeur Sanders, who went to one of Kelly's first QB camps back when Kelly was coaching at UCLA.
The football world is a very small and sometimes very cruel circle. Kelly will be fine, though. He'll have a top college job by next week. The coaching carousel is officially spinning.
And speaking of big games, the Thanksgiving slate is here, and the Lions hosting the Packers is, I mean, it's a massive game for the playoff picture.
It's a huge one. It's a rematch from week one, which the Packers won pretty easily, 27-13. But now the Lions are 7-4 at home, and they're 3-point favorites.
The leverage in this game is just off the charts, especially for Green Bay. I saw a projection that if the Packers win, their playoff chances jump from 77% all the way up to 91%.
Wow, that's a huge swing. And a loss drops them down to 68%. So yeah, this one game has a massive impact on their season.
They needed to keep pace with the Bears while the Lions are trying to hang on after that crazy overtime win against the Giants.
A game that really showed both the best and worst of this Lions team. Their resilience is incredible, but man, their defense has some holes.
But that overtime, that was just perfect Dan Campbell football. He basically said, "My only play call is get the ball to Jahmyr Gibbs."
And Gibbs took the first play of overtime, 69 yards for the touchdown, game over. He just rewarded his coach's faith instantly.
And that game only even got to overtime because of their kicker, Jake Bates. A 59-yard franchise record tying field goal to tie it.
An incredible kick. And I love the detail that he recites a Bible verse, Hebrews 12.1, as part of his routine on those big kicks. Whatever works, I guess.
On the other side of that game, the Giants' interim coach, Mike Kafka, he put on a trick play masterclass. They put up over 500 yards of offense on that Lions defense.
It was amazing to watch. The Giants' offense, which is usually so boring, was suddenly the most exciting show in the league. It had a double pass touchdown.
Right. And then the craziest play of the year, where Jameis Winston, the quarterback, catches a 33-yard touchdown pass from his wide receiver, Gunnar Olszewski.
It was wild. And Kafka's creativity has to put him in the conversation for the full-time head coaching job.
But he also made the decision that let the Lions back in the game, going for it on 4th and goal late up by 3 instead of just kicking the field goal.
That's the other side of the coin with aggressive coaches. When it works, you're a genius. When it fails, you get second-guessed all week. And that failure led directly to the Lions getting the ball back and Bates hitting that monster kick.
So while the Lions and Packers battle it out, another team in that division, the Vikings, are in real trouble. They're 4-7 after getting blown out by Green Bay. And J.J. McCarthy is really struggling.
He looked bad in that game. Mm-hmm. 12 of 19 for 87 yards and 2 picks. And now you're starting to hear the whispers about the Vikings letting Sam Darnold go, who's having a pretty good year in Seattle.
It's tough because it's not all McCarthy's fault. That offensive line is terrible. The run game is non-existent. It's a really bad situation for a rookie quarterback.
It is. But you can't bench him now. You have to see it through. What they need to do in the offseason is bring in a reliable veteran to compete with him or at least provide some insurance if he continues to struggle.
All right, the other Thanksgiving game, Ravens at the Bengals. Baltimore is favored, but Lamar Jackson hasn't looked right.
No, he hasn't. Since he came back from that hamstring injury, he hasn't thrown for 200 yards in 3 straight games. And their big problem, their fatal flaw, is still their inability to score touchdowns in the red zone.
Is that a play calling issue, or is it a physical thing with Lamar not being 100%?
I think it's a little of both. He seems hesitant to really step into his throws, especially in the tight windows of the red zone, and that makes the predictable play calls even less effective.
The Bengals get Joe Burrow back, which is huge for them, but they still have one of the worst defenses in the league and a bad offensive line.
Right. So even with Lamar not at his best, the Ravens should still be able to run the ball all over Cincinnati. I think the talent gap, especially on defense, is just too big. Baltimore should win this one.
Let's talk about two more teams who are trying to figure out who they are. The Jets and the Falcons. For the Jets, it's just more the same misery. They're 2-9 now after losing to the Ravens.
It's tough to watch. But you have to give Coach Aaron Glenn credit for how he's handling it. You saw that after Breece Hall fumbled at the 2-yard line, which basically lost them the game.
Yeah, Glenn came right out and defended him, said, ST happens, and that Hall is my guy. He knows Hall is really hard on himself, and he wanted to get in front of that. That's great leadership.
It is. But that great player management is in sharp contrast to a really questionable coaching decision he made earlier in that game.
The 4th and 2 from their own 42-yard line.
Yes. Down by only 3 points in the third quarter, there was just no reason to take that risk. You punt the ball, you trust your defense, and you play the field position game.
Instead, they fail, give the Ravens the ball near midfield, and basically hand them a field goal.
It felt like a moment of desperation. And it's that kind of gamble that gets coaches fired. The risk just did not justify the reward there at all.
Now contrast that with the Atlanta Falcons. They beat the Saints 24-10, and they are suddenly building a real identity on defense.
It's amazing. They've had 5 or more sacks in 4 straight games. Only 10 other teams in NFL history have ever done that. And the best part is, all the guys getting their sacks are first or second year players.
So you're talking about guys like James Pierce Jr., Brandon Dorlus, Xavier Watts. This is the kind of young core you can build around.
Absolutely. Pierce is starting to look like the star pass rusher they drafted him to be. And that young pass rush completely shut down Taysom Hill, who has always given the Falcons fits.
And the offense changed its identity in that game, too. They were under center a lot more, using 3 tight end sets.
It was a clear shift to a more physical ground-and-pound style. And it worked. They bullied the Saints at the line of scrimmage, controlled the clock, and it took a lot of pressure off Kirk Cousins.
And Cousins had maybe his best game in over a year. The play-action game was working perfectly for him.
It was. The only guy who didn't seem to benefit was Kyle Pitts. He had a couple of really bad drops, one of which led to an interception.
And that's the concern with him, right? Can he be a consistent contributor in a run-first offense that needs him to block and make tough catches? The jury is still out. Okay, let's switch over to the college game, because the biggest rivalry in sports is this week, the game. And the stakes could not be higher.
No, they could not. Number 1, Ohio State, undefeated at 11-0, goes on the road to face number 15, Michigan, at 9-2. And the historical pressure on Ohio State is just immense.
They're trying to avoid losing 5 straight games to Michigan for the first time since the 1920s.
Can you imagine that weight on Ryan Day's shoulders? If he loses a 5th straight time to his arch rival, the calls for his job in Columbus will be deafening, even with an 11-1 record.
And it's not just about bragging rights. This has huge college football playoff implications.
Massive. A Michigan win could send them to the Big Ten title game, and it could force Ohio State, the number 1 team in the country, to play in a first-round playoff game instead of getting that crucial bye.
So where is this game going to be won or lost?
It's always a battle in the trenches, but I'm looking at the Ohio State secondary against the Michigan wide receivers. If Ohio State can prevent the big play downfield and force Michigan to be one-dimensional, they have a great shot.
But if Michigan can run the ball, control the clock, and keep that explosive Ohio State offense on the sideline,
then it's a whole different ball game. It's going to be fascinating to watch.
Meanwhile, in the SEC, the Lane Kiffin saga is just completely dominating the coaching carousel.
It's a mess. He's being linked to the LSU job, and it's creating chaos for both schools. One day, there's a report he bought a house in Baton Rouge. The next day, he's demanding a new contract from Ole Miss.
And the timing is just terrible with the Egg Bowl against Mississippi State this week.
Exactly. His team has to play their biggest rival, and they have no idea if their coach is going to be there next year. It's a huge distraction. And LSU needs to hire a coach before the recruiting dead period. This whole thing is hurting everybody involved.
And it could even impact the SEC championship game. Georgia's sitting at number 4. But they could end up playing Ole Miss for the title.
Right. And if Kiffin and his team are distracted by all this off-the-field drama, it could make Georgia's path to the playoff even easier. The coaching chaos has real on-field consequences.
All right, let's hit a few other big stories from the college world. Jeremiah Love at Notre Dame had a monster game.
He was incredible. He tied Jerome Bettis' school record with his 20th touchdown of the season. And get this. He had 171 yards on just 8 carries.
That's over 21 yards a pop. Just absurd efficiency.
In ACC, Miami is now the highest-ranked team at number 13. They're quietly putting together a really solid season.
On the flip side, Florida State is in trouble. They're 5-6, and they need to win their last game just to become bowl eligible.
It's been a rough slide for them, and their loss to NC State was just full of what were called mind-boggling mistakes. Two muffed punts, questionable late-game decisions. It was just ugly.
But they announced that Mike Norvell will be back as coach through 2026.
A big vote of confidence. They clearly believe he can fix these execution issues.
And finally, the coaching carousel has its first victim. Cal fired Justin Wilcox after they lost the big game to Stanford.
That was the last straw. It guaranteed he would finish with a losing record in conference play for the 9th straight season. You just can't survive that, especially when you lose to your rival who has an interim coach.
And a big recruiting win for Utah. They landed a top dual-threat quarterback for 2026, Kane Archer.
A massive get for them. He's a blue-chip prospect who joins what is already the highest-rated recruiting class in Utah history. It shows they're serious about building an offensive powerhouse out west.
So to wrap it all up, Week 12 completely reshaped the NFC. The Rams look like the clear team to beat, and the Eagles suddenly look incredibly vulnerable.
And in the AFC, the Patriots are back, which nobody saw coming, creating a real race in the AFC East. And Myles Garrett is on a historic pace, on track to completely rewrite the sack record book.
And we head into Thanksgiving with the game looming over college football, with massive CSP implications, while the Lane Kiffin circus continues to swirl around the SEC. It all came down to a few critical plays and a lot of critical decisions from the sideline.
It really did. And you think about all the huge coaching calls this week. Chip Kelly getting fired, Aaron Glenn's huge gamble on fourth down, Mike Kafka's aggressive call that cost the Giants the game. So I'll leave you with this to think about. What single coaching decision from this week, win or lose, do you think will have the biggest long-term ripple effect for that franchise? Something to chew on as we get ready for the home stretch of the season.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.